Welcome to Double Take. This is Jake, joined by Matt, back in Utah after a long road trip and a weird week back home. But we are in the same place again and ready to roll.
Yeah, it's nice. Hopefully these things will, you know, run a little bit smoother. Not that they haven't been smooth, but it's easier when I can see you talking and know when to cut you off.
It is
this and that.
A lot easier, yeah. And we, like I said, we were on a road trip, moving back. Matt drove down to Arizona. So it's been about 2 weeks, I think, since our last episode.
Yeah, it's been a sec. We took a little bit to move you in this week, and then before that we saw a lot of things. We saw New Mexico, which we'd never been to. We saw Denver, which we'd never been to. So Rocky Mountain State. It took us a while. We had to leave Denver and drive for a little while, but eventually we did get to some Rocky Mountains.
Eventually did find some ski resorts. Yeah, Denver is closer to a plain than a mountain, I would say.
Yeah, that's I would think that's accurate.
Colorado Springs was pretty.
Yeah.
It was pretty. Yeah, so we went, like Matt said, Mexico. We went Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Taos. I think Taos was my favorite part of New Mexico.
Yes, and that is a town that is near to several ski resorts, for those of you like me who hadn't heard of it before.
Yeah. We went. I think I've heard of it somehow, but I don't know how I have you haven't. So maybe in Arizona they've commercialized it more.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was cool. I liked before that we drove through several Indian reservations, which we have some in Utah. I've never really visited them. I think we've driven through some briefly in Arizona, but we saw a lot in New Mexico, and that was interesting and sort of eye-opening experience. I think we, you know, knew what those reservations were like, but it was just interesting to see kind of, you know, the government issued houses and some of the other things. Obviously, just looking at it from the outside, not really going in.
Yeah, New Mexico's pretty uptight about the corona stuff too. So, because there was in Taos, there was the Pueblo, is it called, that we were gonna go to, but they didn't let really anybody in or out of that because in New Mexico, the Native American community has been hit pretty hard, is what people told us, is why New Mexico's pretty strict about the corona.
Yeah. So, especially compared to Arizona, which you guys didn't really seem to care at all.
Arizona's open for business. Yeah. Arizona, like, even, yeah. Arizona, honestly, like, obviously there were restrictions, but it got to a point where it was just business as usual. It got a little too quickly adjusted, even for me, and I'm pretty on the pretty lax side, I would say, of this.
Right.
But, like, Old Town was open up, so, like, all the, like, bars and restaurants and stuff were literally packed, like, no pretense of social distancing at all. So I didn't get to go out before I left.
Yeah.
So RIP to that. I'll have to go back. If football doesn't get canceled, BYU's playing ASU. So that's my excuse to go back there.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
That's good.
Yeah, Colorado. Colorado Springs was pretty. Air Force Academy. We saw it from the highway. Pretty. Stadium looked cool. And it's supposed to be one of the top stadiums in the country, views-wise, as well. Breckenridge. Do you like Breckenridge or Vail better?
I think, I mean, Vail was nicer. Breckenridge had that lake by it, so if I was gonna go somewhere, I would probably say Breckenridge, but Vail was definitely the more Park City rich person type place.
Yeah,
obviously Breckenridge is, I'm sure, a place for rich people as well.
You seem more like a Breckenridge person. Yeah, Breckenridge seemed more like, obviously, like rich, but a lot more relaxed, where Vail was very resorty.
Yeah, and resorts are great.
Not a bad thing. They're
not my thing. Our sister Annie, very into resorts. She could go to Vail and have a great time.
Not a bad thing.
So,
but yeah, then we were in Moab for a couple of days. Moab, Utah, Arches National Park. First time we'd been to Canyonlands, so that was cool. I liked Arches better, but Canyonlands was surprising.
Yeah, Canyonlands is very cool. It is mostly canyons, believe it or not.
It looked a lot like the Grand Canyon, honestly.
Yeah, and you know, the Grand Canyon was deeper, and I think because it's at a lot higher elevation, it's a prettier landscape with the pine trees and the wildlife and some of the other stuff. But yeah, Canyonlands had some really amazing views.
It did. It was really cool. And then, yeah, so I've been back a few days now, and unpacking, and there's just a lot going on as well. So, you know, we don't know where it's going to go. We have a rough outline of what we want to talk about. We wanted to start with Drew Brees' comments, I think. Part of the problem also is everything's moving so fast. Like, the Drew Brees thing changed from Wednesday to Friday pretty dramatically. the Florida State situation all started and ended in a day, pretty much.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about
Florida yeah, State. Yeah, there's just actually. So much. The best one has been DeMarcus Cousins, and we'll talk about that as well. There's been just, yeah, so much. So we'll see what happens. But one star, Drew Brees. Matt, anything before we get started on Drew Brees?
No, let's just go right into it.
All right, so on Wednesday, Drew Brees was doing an interview with Yahoo Finance, and like they had just, I think the reporters just mentioned kind of in passing something. This was the reporter's question, said, what his thoughts are on the players kneeling again when the NFL season starts. I was trying to find the quote. Here's Drew Brees's quote, "I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States." So this is me again, just, you know, putting us in his shoes, trying to get us to see where he's coming from. And then he goes on to say this, "I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for those that matter, those throughout the civil rights movement of the 60s, and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right throughout our country right now? No. No, it's not. We still have a long way to go, but I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together and that we can all do better and that we are all a part of the solution." So, nice thought by Drew Brees, especially today's June 6th, D-Day anniversary. So, quick shout out, because those guys literally saved the world. And Matt, you know, World War II, obviously anyone who fought in a war, World War II, Vietnam, I like learning about the Civil War a lot, but we did not have to do that, and I'm very grateful for that, because I would not last very long.
Absolutely,
yeah. So, brave. And yeah, Drew's grandfathers, he obviously heard about that a lot growing up, and the problem that people had isn't what he said. It's not like he said anything intrinsically wrong. It's just Drew was telling people what he felt, what he thought, instead of listening to some of the other players with similar yet very different experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that, because to me, I think the reason that this has got so much scrutiny, like, I think if, for example, Nick Bosa, who we've been aware is a Donald Trump supporter and a pretty strong Republican, I think if he said this, it wouldn't really shock people. I think people are so shocked about Drew Brees. I'm not sure where his political ideas are, but people really like Drew Brees. We see him as a good guy. We always see him in the huddle with his black and white teammates, and he's the one pumping everybody up. And he's somebody that the country looks up to, particularly in New Orleans, because of when he arrived right after Hurricane Katrina. And so these comments strike me, yeah, just like you said, as, you know, a good person who wants the best for his black teammates, but probably didn't understand the severity of everything that's been going on. And so it's been interesting to listen to his apologies in the last two or three days. The first one I thought was pretty weak, just because he didn't actually really address what he said or what he said was wrong, just that he wanted greater social equality, which is fine, but it still misses the point of why people were upset at what he originally said. And then the last couple days, I think he's come out stronger and stronger. He's addressed police brutality directly. He's addressed President Trump directly, obviously. So he's certainly learning the right things to say. And, you know, he's somebody that I'm inclined to believe as he says them. Although I think, you know, as somebody grows, it's not just what they say, it's what they do. So I think we're going to want to watch Drew Brees, what he does throughout the season, if we even have a season coming up in the fall. You know, I hope that he does grow, and I hope he does learn from this.
Yeah, I was shocked, because I feel like I don't think it's one-for-one even equivalency. But I feel like when Peyton Manning retired, Drew Brees took over Peyton Manning's role as the not Tom Brady but famous quarterback, as the guy who's going to be in commercials, the funny guy. I think Manning does a lot better job of that, and I think Manning's a better player. But I think Drew Brees, for someone like our mom who watches about a half a game of football a year, she loved Peyton Manning. I feel like Drew Brees kind of took over that role.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it surprised a lot of people. And a lot of people in New Orleans were hurt. I don't want to say are because, like you said, Matt, so the Hurricane Katrina happened in 2005. Drew Brees and Reggie Bush came in 2006. So that next season, so Drew Brees / Reggie Bush, and especially now it's basically Drew Brees, became the unofficial face of the Saints and the rebuild for the city of New Orleans. And Drew Brees means as much to New Orleans as any athlete does, at least right now, in the last 10, 15 years or so. And there are people chanting F Drew Brees in New Orleans. A famous columnist wrote in New Orleans that Drew Brees betrayed the city. And, you know, people supporting Drew Brees are pointing out the charity he's done. He donated $5 million just for COVID relief just this year. His charity has donated over $25 million, according to their website, the Drew Brees Foundation. So no one's denying the good he's done in the community. But then when you see his teammates, when you see Michael Thomas upset, and to be fair, Michael Thomas has been resoundingly supportive of Drew Brees the last 2 days. So Drew Brees said that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Michael Thomas has been on board. So it seems like it's getting repaired. But Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, who does, I don't know if he's even met Drew Brees because he hasn't been a Saint while they've been in training camp and stuff, but he posted his disgust. Malcolm Jenkins, I would say you're one of your favorite players ever.
Yeah, for football, absolutely.
I don't have an affiliation to Malcolm Jenkins other than I respect him, but he's told Drew Brees to shut the F up in a video. And in both the videos he posted, you could see just frustration from Malcolm Jenkins, like real, real frustration. Nate Burleson, former receiver, now he's on a Good Morning Football. He told a story about both his grandparents who served in World War II, and then one of his grandparents was shot by the police in San Francisco in the 70s when Nate was, you correct me because you just watched it, but from my understanding, Nate was a little kid and he'd ask his dad about what happened to his grandpa, and Nate's dad had to go to the morgue, identify his grandpa as the one shot by the police. So Nate was, and all these guys, but Nate in particular of that sort, just trying to get Drew Brees to see that the flag doesn't have the same meaning, our country doesn't have the same meaning. So when Drew Brees is talking about it showing unity, what black people are trying to get is that the point is there's not, they don't feel the unity right now.
Yeah. So I promise I'm going to bring this back, but we in 2017 went to a U2 concert.
Very good concert in San Diego.
Really good concert. And one of the things I remember more than the songs, that at the end, Bono was talking about America. This is a band that a lot of their songs are about what America is and what it isn't. And he sort of talked about America, the country, versus America, the idea. And I think that, you know, it's easy to look at what America is, and America is a great country. We've done a lot of great things. We've made a lot of progress, you know, obviously in terms of establishing democracy, that's been really, really great. But America is the idea, kind of this ideal that all people can be equal, and that everybody should get to have a fair shot. And that kind of America is this beacon of hope, Statue of Liberty type ideal. I think that is what Colin Kaepernick and other players in the NFL and all these protests that we see in the street basically every day now, I think they're hoping that America, the country, sort of we can achieve more of this America, the idea. I think what the founding fathers wanted when we started it. And I think, you know, Drew Brees is starting to sort of understand that. And I think his teammates are helping him. But I'm going to be curious to see how that goes throughout the season. If this is something, I think there is sort of a pressure for them to need to support him right now because they know they're going to have to play with him in the fall. But I'm not convinced that they're really going to be with him unless he shows them. And so far he's done a good job, but I think he's got more to do. And I don't want to go too much into Drew Brees. Like, Drew Brees has to change. Drew Brees has to get better. I mean, he does, but I think that the way he's been forced to look at himself and his ideas, I'm hoping that as everything's going on with these protests and everything we see on social media, that that's something that every white person does.
Yeah, totally. And I forgot what I was going to say, but you are exactly right. So we can leave it at that, because I feel good on Drew and go to the next thing, because I just thought of something that made me pretty mad that I think made you mad as well.
Let's talk about
it. So, do you remember a year or two ago when Laura Ingraham from Fox News told LeBron and Kevin Durant to shut up and dribble?
Yeah, I think I know where you're going.
So this relates to Drew Brees, but she said she defended him like he's a human. He has some worth. He's entitled to his opinion, which is true. But why doesn't LeBron James, like, that implies logically that Drew Brees gets an opinion because he has, quote, some worth. That implies that to Laura, Kevin Durant and LeBron don't have any worth.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not pretend that Laura Ingraham is the only person who's said these sorts of things. Like, on social media, I follow basketball and football Twitter mostly. And the most frequent comment I see is stick to sports. So basically, you do sports, and so that's the only thing you should do. That's essentially what Laura Ingraham is saying. And that's such, I mean, obviously, like, people listening to this, I would assume that most of you understand why that's silly. But it's like, yeah, you play football, so you don't get to talk about politics. Listen to me, who's an English teacher, or my twin, who's in finance, or like you Twitter commenter who works on a farm or something. Yeah. And working on a farm is great. That's not what I'm saying. I just don't see why you get to talk about politics and Mina Kimes or Dominic Foxworth or Malcolm Jenkins don't.
Dominic Foxworth is so smart.
Yeah, he's very smart. Bomani, yeah, I know we talk about Bomani a lot on this podcast, but he's had a couple of really, really good episodes this week, and I think he is the smartest person in sports. And so if you're looking to sort of unpack the way these protests have affected not just the sports world, but I think the world as a whole, he's a really good person to listen to right now.
Yeah, and what bugged me the most about Laura's comment specifically is that if she would have said Drew Brees shut up and throw the football, it would have been wrong, but you know, at least she's being consistent.
Yeah, no, that by the way she responded differently, she's very clearly showing us the way that she values black people.
It's so stupid. I have a few things to talk about, but you just want to talk about, you know, the protest of kneeling for the flag. We talked about it a little bit in the car either yesterday or today.
Yeah.
That seems the flow we're going. So, and Matt can speak to this. I'm a 49ers fan, so I want to present my argument is that I, as the quarterback, I am no Colin Kaepernick fan. He threw 3 interceptions in the fourth quarter in the 2013 NFC Championship when Seattle went on to win the Super Bowl. The next year, the 49ers went 8-8, and in 3 specific games, Colin Kaepernick either had a turnover or in a different way lost the game. They would have gone 11-5, made the playoffs at 11-5. Instead, we missed the playoffs, and that started a long stretch of being pretty bad. So I'm not pro Colin Kaepernick, the football player.
Yeah, and I do want to say also this is another thing. For those people who don't know, I'm a BYU fan. Jake wants to BYU, and he supports BYU, but you are a Utah fan, particularly at this time that Colin Kaepernick is the quarterback and he takes the job from Alex Smith. And so I think because of that, you probably are more critical of Colin Kaepernick than most 49ers fans are as a quarterback, because Alex Smith is one of your favorite athletes.
I agree. Alex Smith, love him. My first email was alexsmith1211@hotmail.com.
Yes. So that is,
I have 3 Alex Smith jerseys I just unpacked.
Yeah. So not saying that you're not being objective, but I do think that your fandom is influencing your view of Colin Kaepernick as a football player and maybe viewing him as less good than he actually is.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think in 2016, 2017, whenever he started protesting, I do think that affected my thoughts on him kneeling. I think if a different player would have done it, I would have felt a little bit differently. But right now, I think I was wrong on my initial thoughts. And how I feel now is that there's no right way to protest, because the point of a protest is to do it the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Colin Kaepernick started, and I was talking to you about this, but when he started doing it, he was sitting on the bench, not talking, didn't tell anyone, didn't tell the press, like, hey, I'm protesting. He just did it. You know, it's just something he felt like he wanted to do. And then a few, I think it was like week three of the preseason, maybe, someone mentioned it. Someone asked him, like, why'd you sit during the national anthem? And that's when Colin Kaepernick mentioned it. And that's when this whole thing got started. And then he spoke to Nate Boyer, who's a veteran, I believe a Green Beret, but I know he's a Army veteran. And Boyer said, in their conversation, I don't know if Boyer said, but in their conversations, Kaepernick decided to kneel instead of sit to show respect for the troops, the military, while still having his protest. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people give him credit for that enough, that he listened, he was trying to be respectful, but at the same time, a protest isn't meant to be respectful.
Yeah, and I mean, at the beginning, like you said, he wasn't really talking about it. And so at the beginning, it's even less of a protest. I'm not sure what you call it. What struck me when this first happened, something that I'm always going to remember, is that, and I don't remember the quote in his entirety, but he said that, I'm not going to stand for the flag of a country that doesn't respect me, either as a person or a human being, is what he said. And I've always thought that is so ironic, just listening to the responses, that people are so upset that he's not respecting the flag or the country, when really what he was trying to say, or what he felt, is that he wasn't being respected as a human being. That's really where it came from. And it sort of goes back to what I was talking about with the U2 concert, is that we have this idea of America as this beautiful place where everybody's treated equal, everybody's treated fair, everybody has a fair shot. And what he's saying by kneeling is, I don't have that shot. I don't have those opportunities. Obviously, things worked out very well for Colin Kaepernick. And, you know, he's been able to get a lot of money, and things worked out well for him. But that doesn't mean that things are hard, and that doesn't mean that he didn't face challenges that white people haven't had to face.
When you say worked out well, you're referring to, like, he made it to the NFL, got to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and obviously with his protests, you know, he got blackballed. But right. I'm just saying that at least before that point, he's had a better life than 99% of the history of the world. And even now, he would like to be playing in the NFL, but I think he's still doing pretty well for himself compared to the majority of people in this country.
Yeah, and that's, you're not saying so he should stop doing what he's doing. You're just pointing out other people's arguments and a fact that, like, something can be good while still wanting an improvement.
Yeah, and to say that even though he's had success, he's still not being respected in certain areas of his life.
Right. And Dabo, who we'll talk about next, Dabo Swinney, when this was happening, he said Kaepernick should move to another country. And the problem, what's hard for Dabo, it's hard for me and you, just because we've never felt like that at all. So when other people say that, it's just completely different from what we've gone through, because I've always been respected by my country. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think a lot of people get defensive and they love their country, which is true. We both love America, but they take that as insulting them personally, where Colin Kaepernick's America is very different than mine and yours. And I think that shouldn't be hard, but it just is hard for a lot of people, and they can't understand that Colin Kaepernick's America is different than ours, that Drew Brees' America is different than Nate Burleson's America. It's still the same country. And they just want to take that's what I think Drew's, his first mistake with his quote was, he's taking his viewpoint and he thinks that should be everybody's, instead of understanding the different viewpoints and trying to fix that. Because all these people just aren't making stuff up. Like, Colin Kaepernick didn't make stuff up. Malcolm Jenkins, that hurt and frustration from when he was quoting or responding to Drew Brees. They're not making it up. KJ Sayles, a former North Carolina Tar Heel, now he's at USF to be closer to his family. He led a unity walk in the Tampa area today, and he got emotional speaking about it, like just really emotional with his daughter. And they're not making it up, is all. And did you have a – I was talking, but I saw you looking something up.
Oh, yeah, I was looking it up, and just what you said was interesting, and I think it's pertinent that our America is different than Colin Kaepernick's, and certainly the way that we interact with America is different. And I hope what people are starting to realize, and I think what we're starting to realize is – that, you know, the Black America is our America too. We're all living in the same place. And what I was looking up is I just want to make sure I got the wording right. Martin Luther King said that no one is free until everyone is free. And so we can't really be the America that we want to be or we think that we want to live in until it's that America for Black America and Latino America and Asian America. Once that happens, I think people don't understand, but that was something Martin Luther King talked about a lot, is that America will be better for white people as it's better for Black people.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominic Foxworth talks a lot about cherry picking Martin Luther King quotes. A lot of people just do the hate can't cast out hate, only love can do that. Mm-hmm. And great quote. I love it. But there's also a lot of stuff, like you just said, a lot of things that were pretty critical that need to be said and to be done. And we just haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about Dabo?
Talk about Dabo.
Let's talk about Dabo, because it affects the state of Utah where we live in as well. This happened, a defensive coordinator at the University of Utah, similar situation, but we'll talk about Dabo first. So two things happened. One, Dabo didn't really say anything about the protest, anything that's going on. And this was, remember, every football team, every pro league, every corporation essentially was putting out a general feel-good statement. The worth of those you can judge. I think some were good. Most were pretty just, I want to get a good PR thing about him. I'm a cynical person. So mm-hmm. We'll move past that. Dabo didn't say anything. And then when he did say something, it was basically like, there's been a lot of bad news going on around the country. Well, I got some good news. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ, brothers and sisters. And, you know, we all just forgive each other and go from there. And obviously that's an improvised quote, but he was just very vague in talking about Jesus the whole time. And I, as a Christian, me and you're both Christian, I'm like, well, that do something specific. Like, who's forgiving who, Dabo? Like, what are Black people apologizing for? What are I want to make sure I say this right. We as white people, we're not forgiving them of anything. We're trying to get them to forgive us and fix the problem. So just talking about general, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Just talking about general forgiveness and Jesus Christ doesn't mean anything. And again, I'm Christian, so I'm not insulting that part.
Sure, yeah. Well, and that's, you know, in our particular sect of Christianity, one of our the most important scriptures, I think, is faith without works is dead. So basically, if you believe in Jesus Christ and you trust Jesus Christ, you should believe what he says. You should do what he asked you to do. If you really love Jesus Christ, then you're going to love your neighbor as yourself, and you're going to help people, and you're going to support people, and you're not going to be, I can't think of the word that I'm trying to come up with, but the point is essentially you should do what you're talking about. You need to act in order to have faith. And that's, you know, about as far as what I want to get in with religion. But essentially, if that's really what Dabo says, then he needs to do something with it.
Yeah, I agree. And he had an opportunity to do something because Clemson tweeted out that speech, like a Dabo quote, and it was like the video of everyone linking arms, you know, as the captains go out and stuff. And a former Clemson player said that, you know, stop that, blah, blah, blah. And then he said that a coach used the N-word in practice. A white coach used the N-word in practice. And it came out that it was Coach Perlman. He's the tight ends coach. And he used it. He did use that word in practice. It was 3 years ago. And he apologized to the player and to the position group. He never apologized to the team until he released a statement a day ago, a few days ago, whenever this started happening. And you know, that's a clear-cut example of Dabo having an opportunity to do something, and he didn't do anything. didn't do anything, like didn't suspend the coach ever, and coach is still on the team, still coaching tight ends over there. And you know, me and you grew up, one of the first things we learned was just don't say it. Like, it's really not that hard. Mm-hmm. And I think it's inexcusable. There's no reason for a white person to say it. I think that just is what it is. Mm-hmm. And Dabo had an opportunity to do something and he didn't. And the reason, did you want to say something?
Nope.
All right. So in the University of Utah, the defensive coordinator, a recruit, had a screenshot of a text that he sent that he was trying to send to another coach. And he accidentally sent it to the recruit. And the defensive coordinator, Morgan Scally, and this is in 2013, the text said something to the effect of, I recruited four N-words. Something to that effect. And that didn't get brought up till now. He got suspended by the University of Utah. And obviously, I don't know how much they knew about it, but at least good for them for suspending him. We'll see what happens. And it was interesting. That one was interesting because in Clemson's case, from what I saw, it was a lot of people upset, former Clemson players upset at that coach. With the Utah case, there were two former players who said that's not shocked, and they'd heard that before. And a lot of players, a lot of BYU players as well, came to Morgan Scally's defense.
Yeah, and at least a few of them had transferred from the University of Utah.
Yeah, some of them had transferred. Some of them were just recruited by Morgan Scally. And that surprised me. The what bugged me the most with the University of Utah situation was all the white University of Utah fans talking about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And it's not up to any of them to decide who gets forgiven or not. If the players don't want to be mad, that's great. But if they do want to be mad, that's also great. They have every right to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And what concerns me, I actually hadn't known that the text was supposed to go to another coach. What concerns me is that he felt comfortable enough saying that to another coach that he thought that he wasn't going to get in trouble. That, to me, suggests that there's some level of tolerance of that word, even if it's just among those two coaches. I don't really know, but I think that's problematic, and I hope that in their investigation they address that and the coach that it was going to, or at least they understand the context that it was going into the coach and how he would have responded, as well as just Morgan Scally.
Yeah, because the Utah coaching staff, there's at least right now at least two black coaches, the cornerbacks coach and the receivers coach. There's several Polynesian coaches on the staff as well. So you're right. I don't want to think, but I don't know if it was just that a one-time isolated incident. If you're sending it in a text message, I'm sure there's some level of familiarity. And the University of Utah hired a third party to do the investigation while Coach Scally suspended. So assuming the athletics director didn't know about it until now, I think they're handling it the best they could.
Yeah.
I think they're handling it better than Clemson. Assuming both athletic directors didn't know about it. The things Dabo knew about the coach saying the N-word. Didn't apologize to the team, but he knew about it. But we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Assume the athletics director at either place didn't. I think Utah's handling it better. But I don't think it's up for white fans to say, oh, you should forgive him. If the players want to, or anyone who's not, like, any of the minorities want to be mad, want to forgive him, I'm all in. I'm going to listen to what they have to say, and that's their opinion. They're entitled to whatever that is. But it's really bugging me, all the Morgan Scally fans, because he grew up, played at the University of Utah as well. So a lot of people in the state that really like him. It's just so annoying. Like, it's not your place to talk about forgiveness and quote the Bible, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with that. And I was talking to a friend one time, and I was trying to explain why I didn't think that the Washington football team should be called the Redskins. And he says, like, I don't know, man, it doesn't offend me. And it's like, dude, it doesn't matter if it offends you, bro. Why would it matter if it offends you? Why do you think this is about you? And that's, I think, what is a lot of the problem that we're seeing is, and I think, you know, to go back to Drew Brees, I think Drew Brees was just looking at his bubble, his grandfather, what he saw when he looked at the flag. I think my friend was just looking at the way he perceived the Washington team. And again, I just think that we, white America, needs to understand that we are Black America and Latino America and Polynesian America, and we need to understand how these sorts of things are affecting them and how we can make our country better for them and how that's going to And that'll ultimately make it better for everybody.
You know, one thing Drew Brees, I just remember, is Ed Reed. Do you see the Ed Reed video?
I did see that.
He called Drew Brees a sucker like 15 times. That was my favorite Drew Brees reaction video.
It was good. He had said at the beginning of the video is that I'm going to watch my language because I know some of you watch these with your kids. So who knows what he wanted to say? I don't know. But yeah, so I don't know. I'll be interested to see what happens with this investigation to Morgan Scalley, who by all accounts is a good guy.
Yeah, that's what I told you. I've been surprised. Like, so many black former players have come to his defense.
Yeah, and so that suggests to me, you know, that obviously he's done something wrong. There's something that he's not understanding. And so my hope, and like this quote was in 2013, it's very possible that he realized that what he was doing was wrong and that he's changed and just simply never was able to address this to his coach or the public or the team. So you know, hopefully that goodness that he seems to have in his heart, according to his players, is able to help him grow.
Yeah, no, and in the state of Utah, he was Mr. Football when he was in high school. He was on the Urban Meyer Fiesta Bowl team, and as defensive coordinator, he's been in the University of Utah his whole career, coaching and playing. So, and Highland, he won at Highland High School, which is like 15 minutes from the University of Utah. So he's from Salt Lake City. So that's why a lot of people here are defending him. I think it's not their place, though. But again, the former and current players who are defending him, or I've only seen two or three that aren't defending him. I'm reading and listening to everything they have to say because I think it's fascinating. It's just the difference in reaction versus Clemson. I haven't seen one. I might be missing something. It's possible there, but I haven't seen one Clemson player, former player, defend that coach.
Yeah.
Let's talk about DeMarcus Cousins and call it a day.
Yeah, and on a little bit of a lighter note, if there is a light note for this.
This, week. For me, was the – I don't want to say highlight. I don't want to make light of what's going on, but it provided the most comedic relief.
Yes.
Is that a better way to say it?
That's a good way to put it.
Here's what happened. DeMarcus Cousins tweeted at the play-by-play announcer for the Kings, who DeMarcus hasn't played there for 3 years, something like that.
3 to 5.
It was when the All-Star game was in New Orleans is when he was traded.
Which, by the way, before you go on with the story, this isn't relevant. They traded him to New Orleans, and the All-Star game was in New Orleans. Why couldn't they just trade him a day before so he could bring some of his stuff with him?
Because the Kings suck.
Like, I just remember thinking that. Like, oh, he's got to fly all the way back. And I know NBA players fly a lot, but like, come on, guys.
No, I remember he literally got told mid-interview, like mid-press conference session. What? So like,
come on.
So he's literally like, they had all the cameras and the journalists around him. And then someone whispered in his ear. And then, like, the next answer was like, oh, yeah, I love New Orleans. I love the city. And, like, it wasn't public yet, but, like, people went back and, like, oh, he heard he got traded there.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
It was like, yeah, I love New Orleans. So, yeah, so he tweeted at the Kings play-by-play announcer. His name is Grant Napier. And DeMarcus Cousins said, what do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement? And Grant was pretty sarcastic. He said, hey, how are you? Thought you forgot about me. Haven't heard from you in years. All caps. All lives matter. Every single one. Is, end quote. That's what Grant Napier said. Not me. I want to clarify that. Next day, Grant Napier and the Sacramento Kings parted ways. And DeMarcus Cousins won. He's playing the long. He waited 3 years to get that guy fired.
Hook, line, and sinker.
And all the Kings players, like Chris Webber said something like, either before he got fired, like, we knew this would be a response, right? It was like, Chris Webber was not supportive of him. Like, it sounds like all the Kings players were telling the Kings, like, we need to get this guy out of here.
Yeah, well, and that's what's so fun is that Cousins clearly knew that this was going to be his response. And, you know, I don't want to say that DeMarcus Cousins was trying to get the guy fired. I don't know that. But what I think he did, he clearly knew what he was doing, and he clearly knew this is the type of guy that this dude is. And, you know, I think what something's really good that's happening right now is people are being called out and they're being held accountable. And so Cousins clearly knew that this guy would be held accountable if he just gave him an opportunity to speak.
And I just picture him in his house just laughing and just dying, just waiting for that Twitter notification for the response because he knew it'd be – it's not that hard to say Black Lives Matter. You know, it's really not that hard to say it.
Right.
Because it's true. Like, that's not the – the people saying All Lives Matter, I just – like, of course. Like, no, I don't want to swear. No, duh. Like,
yeah, no, there, yeah, that has been.
That's what the Black Lives Matter people are saying. Yeah, they do. Like, let's help ours matter a little bit.
Yeah,
here.
No, that's been widely explained on every social media post. That's so we don't need to go into why all lives matter is a silly statement.
Stupid thing. So, yeah, Grant Napier is no longer with the Sacramento Kings. So, DeMarcus Cousins has the top 10 play of the year for me. There hasn't been a lot of basketball this year. So, that was funny. And, yeah, if he's really, I mean, I don't say, since it's he and all the other Kings players, according to what he's like, I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if that's, you know, that's clearly the experience they had with him. So.
So, shout out to DeMarcus Cousins, the most patient man in America. Who knew? Well, Matt, anything you have to say before we head out?
Yeah. So the only thing I want to say, and it's only because I've mentioned this two or three times in this episode, is one thing that I think has irritated me in a lot of social media posts, particularly by white people. It's clear that a lot of white people, you know, emotionally want to stand by black people and support them. But, you know, we've been down this road and we've had these protests so many times before and you know, we've made progress, but clearly we have not made as much progress as we want to. And people are still getting shot and the police aren't being held accountable in a way that is going to make black people feel safe. And so I hope, and certainly this is something I've been trying to do, is that people take action as opposed to just posting on social media. So one thing that I would recommend people do, there's a lot of good ways you can help, but if you visit the website of Campaign Zero, they lay out a lot of policy changes that they would like to see and research that supports those policies so that you can look at the research for yourself and understand why Black Lives Matter are asking for some of the things that they're asking for. And that way, when you go to the voting booth, you can look at the candidates and you can know the things that they do and do not want to change. And that way you can make informed decisions. In Utah, we're really lucky in that we get mail-in ballots. And so we can get our mail-in ballots. We can Google the candidates. We can see the type of police reform they want, that they support, or maybe they don't support police reform at all. So that's just, we talked about, we want Drew Brees to take action. We want Dabo Swinney to take action. I hope that people, this isn't just another protest that fades. I hope that people actually take action. And that's one of many things that people can do.
And once you're done visiting Campaign Zero, feel free to leave a 5-star review on our podcast. I can't say it better than Matt. So we will leave y'all. Appreciate you listening. And talk to y'all next week.